Welcome to Talking with Tech. I'm your host, Rachel Madel, joined as always by Chris Bouguet. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Rachel, what's going on?
Not much. I'm really excited that we're recording today. What you got for me?
I have a question for you. Something that's been on my mind lately, and I just wanted to pick your brain about it. Let's say, Rachel, I mean, first of all, so everyone knows, we are currently recording in 2021, right? It's 2021. I think it's important for me to say that to you before I ask you this question. Let's say you wanted to learn something new, Rachel, like you got curious about something, you heard about something. It doesn't even have to be necessarily related to our field, just something that you are interested in. How are the different ways that you would maybe go about learning about that topic here in 2021? What would be some go-to ways you'd be like, well, the first thing I do, Chris, is, you know?
The first thing I would do would be Google it. Like, let me just hit a Google search and see what's what here. See what I can find on the internet.
Cool. And now a Google search, I think that most people would say that, right? And I totally agree. Like, if there's a topic that I'm just hearing about and I kind of need to know its definition, I want to explore it a little bit, maybe read up a little bit on it, I would Google it, you know, and I certainly did that. I remember, you know, in our coaching presentations that we do, the term motivational interviewing, I had heard about that. And then that's what I did. I did a Google search. But that's sort of surface level. Like, you can only get so far with a Google search before, if you want to get into a deeper dive and you really want to learn about a topic, what are some other things you would do? What would be your next steps?
So I'm a really big fan of YouTube because I'm like a visual learner. So I like want to see things happening. So I would probably like try to see if I could find some videos that like could help guide my learning.
And I am 100% the same way. And I would totally go to YouTube. I mean, when I needed to learn how to fix my sink, I go to YouTube and then I look up how to fix a sink and then I try it and then I get Melissa and she fixes it. But because I still can't figure it out. But that is something that I do as well, is I go to videos. And in those videos on YouTube, would you agree there's some different styles there? Like, sometimes there's videos of just people talking. Like, you know, we've made recordings of that. We have a YouTube channel, right? A Talking with Tech YouTube channel you could go to and you could see us talking. So that would be one form of video. But then there's other videos where there's people doing. Does all that sound like TED Talks are huge, right? People just talking, right? Would you agree that video is a pretty good strategy?
Yeah, no, I think you can learn. I've learned a lot from YouTube videos just in lots of different areas of my life. But I appreciate it. Like you said, sometimes it's like people just talking about things. Other times it's people showing you exactly how to do something, depending on what it is that you're learning. So I like the visual component and the personal element. I think it's nice to like hear somebody talk to you. It's like kind of like you're talking to a friend oftentimes, like, oh, like they're teaching me about this specific thing. Cool. You feel like you know them.
Yeah, totally. I like what they're saying. I respect what they're saying. And I think there's some other benefits to video. Again, we talk about these in some of our presentations, but I can watch it at 1.5 the speed, 2x the speed. I can pause it. I can go back and watch something over again. I can jump to portions that I just want to show. Like, if I was sitting next to Melissa, be like, you got to watch this part. Oh, you don't need the first 15 minutes. Let me jump right over here and get this part. This is the part that I think is going to be super irrelevant to you. You know, and she'd be like, really appreciative of the fact that I didn't make her sit through that entire thing. We could just jump to that spot. All right, so we've got Google it, YouTube it, watch it at different speeds and watch different videos, different types of videos on the topic. What would be the next thing you would do?
Next thing I would do might be to find some type of like, I don't know, training or like experience where I could like maybe do a deeper dive in the subject matter from somebody who knows a lot more than I do about it. So someone who could teach me directly, or like if it was in person, like maybe someone who could like coach me. I'm thinking about like a sport. I don't know why like that. Like I'm thinking about like, oh, I want to learn how to rock climb, you know, like I would want to like have someone to like help me do it and show me like in person. So I guess it depends on what I'm learning, but I would try to just get somebody to like help guide the learning process for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, if it's a skill, like you said, with rocks climbing, then having some sort of coach there to facilitate that and say, you know, hey, what do you think you did there when you slipped, you know, or, you know, what's your goal? How high do you want to climb? You know, what kind of exercises should I do to when I'm not rock climbing? And what food should I eat that would help me? What foods do you eat, coach? You know, those sorts of things. Certainly have someone that you can bounce ideas off of. Okay, so seeking out a person that knows how to do this. That's what I'm going to summarize that. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Okay. What else? Again, thinking it's 2021, what are some other ways we experience learning about a topic?
I might do a quick search on Facebook to see if there's a cool Facebook group I can join where other people are doing those things.
Yeah, right. There's probably a community already around rock climbing or whatever the thing might be. And so let me go learn from that community and find out questions they're asking or stuff they're doing. That totally makes sense. And maybe could we lump Facebook groups into all of social media? I know you use Instagram a lot, right? Would you be looking at a hashtag on Instagram and seeing the people that might be posting in Instagram?
Hashtag rock climbing. See what everyone else is doing. Start learning all of the lingo and all the things that I would need to know in order to search those hashtags.
I know I certainly do that with Twitter. You know, you being more Instagram, me being more Twitter. That's exactly how I've learned so much, is by following different hashtags and following, again, different people in these areas that I'm interested in. Can I throw out another suggestion here?
Yes.
Being on a podcast, might we also search out a podcast and see, let me listen to the Free Fall podcast or whatever it's called, you know?
Yeah, great idea. Podcast, who knew?
So that'd be another way where you could just kind of consume and listen to people talking about the topic that you're interested in. And again, that's certainly something I did. I wanted to learn more about dyslexia. And so I started listening to a bunch of podcasts about professionals and people living with dyslexia talking about their experiences. And so that helped me a lot in learning so much about that particular topic. Is there anything else that you can think of out there?
Great question. Is there anything else? I don't know. I think maybe read books. Like, I feel like I get really geek out on something and cool. And I start getting books from the library, either audiobooks or actual books. I feel like that's a nice way to deep dive into a specific area.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense too. You could read a book on a topic. Again, maybe about one of those experts that you came across in one of those other medias and be like, well, what else, you know, have they produced? Or maybe what's another modality for me to learn about it? And you learn about it in this multimodal way, you know, all of these different experiences make up a way for you to become better at the topic that you're studying. The reason I bring this all up, because I bet you everyone's listening and I know I can see it on your face. You're like, yeah, but where are you going with this, Chris? Is that when you go to a conference, let me ask you that. When you go to a conference, especially here in the pandemic, and it's an online conference, what's the sort of experience you're expecting to have when you go to a session? Would you expect the session to be, I want to go and I want to listen to someone talk to me for an hour, knowing that you have Google and YouTube and podcasts and books and Facebook communities and everything we just talked about there? Is that an experience do you think you would be looking for, or do you think people would be looking for? Or I'll throw the contrast out there. Would you want the experience to be, all right, I'm spending an hour of my time with you. Don't talk to me for that hour because I can watch it on YouTube. I can read a book. I can listen to a podcast. Do something with me for that hour. Do that coaching experience that you were mentioning. Or let's have this interaction where I can ask you questions and I can get some feedback. And that question I'm asking you, Rachel, but really I'm asking everybody who's listening right now, what do you really want when you go to a conference? Either in person or in this kind of video conference sort of way of doing conferences now. What are your thoughts?
We've talked about this before because we do presentations together. But exactly your point, I would never want somebody to have the same experience during a webinar that I'm presenting or, you know, some type of speaking event as they could have with the recording. So if it's the exact same experience, like, I don't think I've done my job. So, and to, you know, kind of reiterate, I just think that we have this really unique experience of being able to connect in real time with people, even if it's virtually. And so we need to take advantage of that. We need to learn from each other. Chris, you and I are really good at like engagement during our webinars and talking to people. People ask a question in the chat and like it'll take, you know, our presentation into a new direction that we didn't even anticipate. And so I think that's the value of, you know, a collaborative experience where we share our unique experiences and we learn from each other. You know, and of course we practice some of the things that we are trying to learn. I think that is an optimal situation for me.
Do you ever get nervous that you have disappointed people because they've come to an experience and it is interactive? They just wanted to sit and get, you know, where, look, you're Rachel Madel. I just want to listen to you talk for an hour. You know, do you have that anxiety or not? I mean, anxiety might be a strong word for it, but that, you know, that nervous butterfly feeling that people might be thinking that?
Yeah, sometimes. I think that it's the same way that like when we do coaching calls with clinicians, like they want us to tell us what to do. They want us to tell them what to do. And so the moment I'm like, no, that's not the way this works, right? They're like, wait, but I came here because I wanted you to tell me the answer. And so I definitely like do think about it in some ways. I think that because it's so out of the ordinary, I think ordinary is just like set and get, like, let me sit and listen and learn. And I'll put learn in air quotes, learn, just because you can learn some things, right? But I don't think it's as valuable an experience as, you know, something that's more engaging and interactive. And I think because it's so different than what people are used to, they're like, it's like an expectation thing, right? Like we expected something and we're getting something else. And so I think there's always some types of anxiety with that, especially when I'm asking people to share their experiences with the group in a way to teach the group. I think that can take people by surprise.
Do you also think that, so first of all, I feel the exact same way. Like I'm asking these questions because I'm having these feelings, right? And I'm looking for a partner there. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I feel that way too. I started off that conversation with all these different ways, you know, asking all the different ways we could learn. Do you think that is the predominant way people learn new information now? Or do you think there's still a strong contingent of people that like, the only way I learn is I learn once a year, I pay $350 to go to a conference, and I don't go to YouTube. Podcasts, I don't go to podcasts. Social media, no way. Books, that's for pleasure reading. I read my trashy noir novels, and that's what I read. Don't, you know, and the podcast, yeah, I might listen, but I listen to my true crime podcast. I do not listen to podcasts for learning. The only time I learn is one time a year for $350 at a conference. Do you think there are people that do that?
I do think that there probably are people like that. And, you know, do I think it's like that extreme? No. Like, I think probably on social media, we gather some things. But I think that the difference, Chris, and I've thought about this a lot, so I'm happy we're talking about it on air. But I feel like you and I are the kind of people who like, we seek out information. We like want to know about something. And so we go out of our way to spend a lot of time and energy to find information. And I don't think everybody's like that. And so I think that we feel like, well, yeah, why would I like, you know, squander this opportunity where I have engagement and interaction when I've already learned the basics and the foundation on my own through my own kind of journey, finding the information and seeking it out. And so I think that for people who don't actively seek out information on a regular basis, I do think they go to conferences as a way for this like catch-all learning experience all at once. And so I think that probably is where the difference lies.
Right. So this causes a dilemma when trying to design an educational experience at one of these conferences, because what do you do? Because you're going to disappoint people that are now coming to have an experience, that want to share information and knowledge, have an exchange, let's put it that way. And then there's other people that want to just sit there passively and get. And when you have the exchange, oftentimes it's because it's not as scripted. You don't get through as much content. I would argue that maybe it's better. Like, getting through content doesn't necessarily mean that you've presented it well, do you know, or that it sticks or that it's usable. So there could be a level of disappointment because, like you said, this is like an expectation thing. I've come expecting to get 25 resources. You know, I expected you to do a dump of like 25 apps that can be used to engage students with learning. And we gave you 10, but we gave you access to 30 other ones in a spreadsheet created by other people that are actually using it. You know, we just didn't discuss them in detail. How do you make the balance? You know, I'm struggling.
Yeah, and I think that it's hard because, like, I've had the experience of, like, I go in with a plan and then, like, the group I'm with, I'm like, oh, like, they're not responding to my questions. They don't want to engage. And so from the opposite side, from the side of the podium, it's hard because, like, some groups are really great and are super responsive and other groups aren't, and they just want you to, like, relay information essentially. And so what I try to do personally is just like do a little bit of everything, you know, with the exception of we do the Talking with Tech Live, which is like, hey, everybody, just so you know, here's exactly what's going to happen. This is not like a traditional type of lecture. But with the exception of that, I feel like I try to do a little bit of everything so that like I can at least know that I'm satisfying different types of learning styles and I'm able to kind of curate an experience that hopefully most people will enjoy most of the time.
Well, and that has been my experience that, you know, and I've had people say that to me, like, oh, I came in with this idea that it was going to be X and I left with it. The whole experience was really Y, and Y was so much better. It blew my mind. I was like, oh man, it's a Thursday and I have to come to this training and I'm going to sit here all day. And you can just picture them talking to their significant other going, yeah, it's another professional learning thing that I just have to sit there and get through. And by the time they leave, they're like, oh my gosh, that was so engaging. And I answered a bunch of my questions and I was having fun and I was laughing. And, you know, and it was an experience that you go home talking to your significant other going, you know, how awesome, you know, how awesome that was. Or reflecting it on yourself, how awesome that was. You hit on something too that might be a strategy that I can, you've coached me through it, Rachel, that I think is really important. You said in the Talking with Tech Lives, we don't hide the fact what the experience is going to be. This is it. Come if you want to get this experience or don't, but this is what it is. And I feel like that is something maybe I could work on to be more explicit in the description, is like, this is not a sit and get. This is not a lecture style presentation. Come expecting to. I would hope people, most people too, like if they know my name at all, they recognize that it'll be not like that, you know? If they know us, if we're presenting together, that it'll be a little of that, but much more of the engagement piece with stuff of built around these experiences that we want people to have, activities that they do so they can walk away with. So that's something that I'm gonna try and be extra diligent about, is being more explicit in my descriptions.
The other strategy, I think, is like setting the foundation in the very beginning. Like, hey, everybody, really excited to be here. Like, here's how this is going to work. Like, I'm really interested in hearing from everybody. We can all learn from each other. So I'm going to be asking a lot of questions. Feel free to throw it in the chat and we can have a discussion about these things. If something comes up, like, don't hesitate to reach out. And, you know, it could guide this, you know, webinar or whatever it is that you're presenting in a different direction. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about all being together in real time.
Yeah, and I think it works. I think it totally works. I mean, you know, it's been the very few times where I've gotten feedback in any of the presentations you and I have done together, anything I've done separately. Everyone loves the engagement that way, and they participate in the chat, and they participate if they want to in person. You know what I mean? If it was in a live event, no one's forcing you to participate. It's not like I'm a choral calling you. Usually, you know, occasionally if I see somebody, I might call something out. But the vast majority of the time, it's participation by volunteer. You know, And people tend to enjoy that. It's just setting that expectation up at the beginning, you're right, either beforehand or right at the beginning of the experience. And that's what I've tried to do too. Not even make it like a question, but we jump right into an experience, you know, a little bit of like who I am and then boom, let's go, let's do it, you know. All right, well, that was very helpful. And I think it's really helpful just to run through to a list of different ways of learning in today's day and age, you know, that it is not, the expectation necessarily shouldn't be come and sit and get at a conference. And I would challenge anyone listening to this podcast, because you said it, like you and I are people that seek out information. Well, so are the listeners of the Talking with Tech podcast. If you're listening to us right now, you know, chances are you're not doing it because your boss told you to. You know what I mean? You're doing it because you are interested in learning. And I bet you present, you know. So the challenge would be, when you are creating presentations, can you do the same things that we're talking about here, is that making them engaging and interactive and an experience for people, as opposed to a sit and get? Because the sit and gets, there's all these different modalities you can do. You know, you can watch it on YouTube, you can listen to podcasts, you can, well, everything we just talked about.
One thing I'll add to that, Chris, is that, yeah, like you said, a lot of the people listening do present on AAC to their districts, to classrooms, to, you know, lots of different people, because part of what we do as AAC people, right, is teach people about AAC. And one really easy way to get engagement in the beginning of a presentation is to just ask, like, what's your biggest challenge been with AAC? Because that helps guide conversations. I don't know about you, Chris, but when I'm presenting, like, I'm like in flow. So like sometimes like a story will pop into my brain. And if I know that like someone in the audience had said, it's really hard for me to get, you know, the staff to buy in or whatever the problem is, like my brain's primed to like target that more, to give examples of those specific problem areas and how to potentially solve those problems, so that you're really being of value to the people that you're actually teaching. Because one of the reasons people want to go to professional development is because they want to solve problems. They have problems in their practice. They have question marks with, they don't know where to turn or what to do. And so if we can help that, if we help that person, or, you know, obviously help the group too, then people will walk away feeling like it was successful.
Padlet is a great strategy for that. Put your problems in this Padlet and then everyone has access, because maybe we don't have the solution, but someone in the room does, right? Always the room is the smartest person in the room, right? The people in the room. So that is a great tool for that. And of course, we use Google Sheets when we do our Talking with Tech Live, which is essentially what you're getting at, you know, starting off, what are your challenges? What are your barriers? What's rubbing you in a way that you are struggling with? And then we can help change the tide there.
Totally. Really, really happy we talked about this, Chris. What's our interview about today?
Today is a good friend of mine. Her name is Jennifer Edge Savage, and Jennifer Edge Savage currently works for Saltillo, but and we talk about AAC in this particular interview, but she's mostly known in her assistive technology, like the broader scheme of assistive technology. And she and I have presented together a bunch of times, and one of the things that I discovered that she was presenting on at a particular conference was using Alexa and AAC, and bringing those technologies together and how they interface together. And you would think, well, that's pretty easy. Just use your AAC with Alexa. But there's some nuance there that we talk about, and that she was talking about in her presentation. And I just went up to her after her presentation ages ago and said, "You want to come on the podcast and talk about this?" And she said, "Yes, I do." And then, you know, time led on, and we eventually were able to get back together and record this interview. So we're mostly going to talk about Amazon and Alexa, but really, I think this is even a broader scope. It's about anything that is with some sort of voice assistant.
So without further ado, let's head into Chris's interview with Jennifer Edge Savage.
Black women and girls of color are underrepresented in professions related to science, technology, engineering, and math, also known as STEM for short. Imagine the impact changing this fact could have not only on the lives of Black women and girls of color, but on the world as a whole.
Young and preteen girls of color need more experiences and opportunities to learn technology and computer programming skills that can fuel curiosity, ingenuity, and passion. With the proper guidance, inspiration, and mentorship, Black girls and girls of color can become leaders in fields related to STEM.
Black Girls Code is an organization that has a singular mission. It aims to introduce programming and technology to a new generation of coders, coders who will become builders of innovative technologies and of their own futures. Go to blackgirlscode.com to learn more about how you can volunteer or donate to support their mission.
Black Girls Code is working to increase the number of women of color in the digital space by empowering girls of color ages 7 to 17 to become innovators in STEM fields, leaders in their communities, and builders of their own futures through exposure to computer science and technology. They are working to provide African American youth with the skills to occupy jobs related to computing and to train 1 million girls by 2040. Check out their website at blackgirlscode.com or follow them on Twitter at blackgirlscode to learn about upcoming events, volunteer opportunities, apparel, and so much more.
With your help, Black Girls Code will reach their goal and will see millions of young women of color achieve their dreams and change the world for the better. You can make a difference by going to blackgirlscode.com today. So welcome to the Talking with Tech podcast. My name is Chris Bouguet, and I'm here with Jennifer Edge Savage. How's it going, Jennifer?
I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here, Chris. Hello, everyone.
I was trying to think, Jennifer, before this conversation, because ATIA is going on right now as you and I are recording this, and it occurred to me that's probably where you and I met first time was at ATIA, and I was trying to think how many years ago it was that maybe we've known each other, you know?
I'm not sure. I think we've known each other through the same circles, but my clearest memory of really chatting with you, I think, was at the very first ed camp at ATIA.
Yeah, I think so too. And I love those ed camps. I mean, they're one of my favorite parts of the whole, I talk them up all the time because those sorts of conversations and these sorts of relationships grow out of those experiences so much more than like sitting in a session and listening to somebody, you know?
Absolutely. That's what I'm missing right now about not being at ATA, besides sunshine. I love what they're doing remotely and or virtually, but I'm missing everyone face to face.
Yeah, I think everyone's feeling that this year because ATIA is so much like coming home. You know, it's the one time a year you get to see everybody face to face. Throughout the year, sometimes we get to see each other face to face. Like you and I have done some presentations together and we've connected in other ways, but ATIA is like coming home.
It's true because we've been doing this online stuff for a really long time. Like we're doing this all year before any of this pandemic stuff happened. So we're used to being able to have that one time to meet people for the first time that we've been following on Twitter or doing webinars with or something. So it's great. We can make this work.
We will. We totally will. So for those listening that don't know who you are and what you do, can you give us a little bit about your background? Who are you and what do you do?
So I'm Jennifer. I wear a lot of hats and I like it that way. So I'm an occupational therapist by training, and I really quickly just became really interested in the geeky tech stuff and dove into that. So I've worked in a lot of different places over the years, but always in this great field of assistive technology. So I've worked as a school district occupational therapist in New York City and in the Boston area. And I call myself a 7-year cycler. Every 7 years, what do I want to do next? So truly 7 years in schools. Then I had 7 years and I say I went to the dark side, but it was thoroughly enlightening to work with Kurzweil Educational Systems and IntelliTools as their director of implementation services. I loved getting involved with product development and working with those teams. And I said, I think I might have children and I need to ratchet down. So I went into private practice for 7 years. And then they got old enough to, survive. And now my next 7-year cycle, I have decided I dove deep into my weakest area of AT over the years, and that was AAC. So now I'm working in that area with PRC Sotillo as a consultant in Massachusetts, but I also am still me. I've been teaching Introduction to Technology and Technology for Teacher Prep. And anyone who will have me, I will spread the word about assistive technology and UDL and AAC. So I still continue to put on my professor hat through these years. And then occasionally I get to do state grant stuff and I can volunteer or voluntold people like Chris or Mike or other folks to join.
And you're a mother with two kids, right? I know we constantly talk about like what our kids are into and stuff. Is that true?
I am a happy older mom. I have a 10-year-old and about to be 8-year-old. So I have been full-time working remote learning for almost a year now.
You are a busy person. So let me ask you this. This is kind of an off the wall question, but I thought we might be a fun one to start with here. And that is, are you a Schitt's Creek fan? Have you ever seen the TV show? Do you ever know what I'm talking about?
It makes me very happy. That show.
That show
was a great escape. Yes.
So I had
best friends with them.
Didn't it feel like that? Like, yeah, my wife watched that show and then she was like, it was one of those things where I'd be walking through the living room or something. She'd have it on and then I'd be standing there watching it. And she'd be like, why don't you just sit down? I'm like, nah, I don't have time. I got to work. And then finally she said, we're just going to watch this show together. This is going to be our show. And I loved every minute of it. But the reason I bring up that show now in context to what we're going to talk about today is that if we use the word that we're going to use, we might set off a certain device in people's houses. So I thought, because there's a character in that show called Alexis, that you and I might call that device Alexis. What do you think? Can we make a deal and call that device Alexis? I think everyone will know who we're talking about or what we're talking about.
We can give that a try. I put mine on mute just for this. Turn it on.
That's good advice. Like now might be the time to get up if you're listening to this and you don't have your headphones in and that device can hear you. You might go mute it right now so that it's not, well, we could still try, right? We could try and call it Alexis.
It was great. I've done a lot of online trainings and with my AAC device and have turned on other people's Alexa. So yes, that could happen.
So what we're going to talk about today mostly is that voice assistant Alexa, which I'm going to try and call Alexis. And the reason of all the conversations we've had, I think we talked about it once, but really I stumbled across a presentation that you were doing at ATIA. I think it was at ATIA, right? Where you were doing a presentation and
I saw your smiling face come in at the back.
I wasn't there the whole time. Yeah, I wasn't there the whole time. I snuck in, but because I saw you on the agenda and I saw that. And of course, it's something I'm very interested in, the use of voice assistants. And then I sat there and I was fascinated because you were giving so many tips and tricks and talking about the actual, you know, implementation of an AAC system and this voice assistant.
It's going to be hard to do that. We'll try.
It's so hard. So, all right, so let's talk about it. How did you get interested in Alexa or Alexis in using the voice assistant?
I think this might be a quality that you and I share from the work we've done together. I've seen you do. Like, I just got, you know, I heard about Alexa and like, oh, this is new technology for me. Let me try it out. But I can't not look at any of this type of technology without eyes on who else could this serve? What have they created? Do they have any idea the genius they have created to support the individuals that we work with that need alternate access? So I immediately just started wondering, well, who can this help? How can this help? And started just diving into it a little more.
So what are some of the things you discovered? And let me just say, like, when we got that at first, the Alexa, we used it for grocery lists. We used it for music. And I had the same idea, like, well, what else can this sucker do? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So what have you learned over the years that can be applied to help people with disabilities?
I think when you think about different functional needs of different abilities, there's so many doors that it opens, but we're also conscious of doors that are closed too. I think automatically folks who are nonverbal or the deaf and hard of hearing, how do you activate a device without voice. I've seen some interesting hacks over the years of people figure out, well, here's, I'm going to make you developing sign language access through a computer to Alexa. I'm like, this, there's so much possible. So when this device came out, I think immediately the AT community genius kind of plugged in and started like, what else can it do? And what more will they build in? And just over a couple of years, it just, the awareness of the need for built-in accessibility. And even I would say Amazon's access team is thinking about this. So immediately think about just, you know, creating a grocery list or searching for something on Amazon or ordering something. To do it with your voice can be so much faster.
Absolutely. I mean, for everybody, right? Not just people with disabilities. I mean, that's how I kind of sold it to my mom. You know, like when she, you know, typical parent of that generation, why would I need something like this? You know, and I was like, look at my hands covered in chicken juice, you know, from cutting up a chicken. And when I need more something, I just say it and I don't have to write it down. I can do all of that without using my hands. So imagine if somebody had difficulty using their hands and they had motor impairments, how much more this they could use so much more with using their voice.
Exactly. When this first came out, as I started playing, I'm like, well, all the teachers in my life are getting one of these. Mm-hmm. I will ask for forgiveness later when we get in trouble for putting these devices. But wow, the potential of Alexa, how do you spell this? Alexa, who is the second president of the United States? Alexa, what is 4 times 7? I'm working on my math facts. That those basic questions can be just answered for fun out of the box. It's right there. And then convincing, yeah, in-laws, parents, you want to hear that music? You don't know how to shuffle with these CDs or these other tools maybe you don't have access to anymore. Alexa, play Sweet Caroline from Neil Diamond. Boom. It's right there. And with your voice, that's just so easy. And I think about using it, yeah, for spelling support, for organizational kind of checklists. What do I need to do? Reminders. My kids now use it all the time for reminders of when their Zooms are going to start. Because maybe mom's not always available to let them know, hey, it's 10:30, time for Zoom. So it's just endless help for me and my family. And I have to say, I am not anywhere near as geeked out with it as other folks I know. Like, I am always learning new stuff. There's always new things that it can do. But I just, the potential is amazing. And now with the visual devices too, being able to call up a recipe and then have it on your screen and enlarge it. So many uses when your hands are covered in chicken grease and things like that.
I literally did that this afternoon, right? Came down for lunch and I put the chicken into like a marinade, you know, and I was like, what's a good marinade that I can make? And I just said, you know, Alexa, show me chicken marinades. And sure enough, up they came, you know, and I saw it on the screen. So let's go back to a second, because I had a very similar experience, Jennifer, where when we got this, in our school district, we did the same thing. We put it in a classroom, which at the time we didn't know it was a no-no. And it was very unclear how it actually worked. Like, was it always listening? No, they told us it was not always listening. It was only listening for certain key words. But then it came out that it actually, well, I mean, it was a whole thing. It's just now we're in a situation where there's actually versions that are meant for students and that are under protection. But back in the day, we did the same thing. So I just want you to feel like, you know, you weren't on an island there. You know what I mean? We did it too, because it was such a great teaching tool, and it continues to be. How many times have you heard that strategy of ask three before me, you know, ask a friend, go look it up in a book, go ask, then come to me as a teacher, whatever the three sources are. Right. But now
ask
there could
Alexis.
Be exactly ask Alexis. And we got such good feedback from the students. We put it in a middle school classroom of students that would go and they would just go. It became part of just their routine of looking up words, checking their math facts. The teacher, we had the tower, you know, the original tower version. But the teacher had made all of these, just like in Google Slides, and then printed them out, all of these cheat sheets around the room, because the struggle, the thing that got in people's way was forgetting all of the skills and what's the right key phrase to kick off a skill, you know? So she'd have those reminders up, and that was all that was needed, you know?
It's impressive. And yeah, setting up those rules around trying to use it can help with classroom management. I mean, thinking of classroom management, hey, Alexa, let's do a mindfulness minute or a yoga activity in a break, right? It's really powerful. And like you're saying, I think any early adopters of technology, especially in education, we're building the plane while flying it. And they're figuring out, okay, what do we need to do? Like, all right, this is working. What do we need to do for security and safety and all that's really important? And then a lot of that can go, kind of go out the window when you're thinking about individual use at home mm-hmm. and how can they use it, opens up even more doors. But I love how you just threw it in. It became so successful.
Yeah. And then that I should clarify that, since this is going to go out for everybody to hear, is that's exactly what we did. Once we realized that it was, it could be violating students' privacy, then of course we kind of said, oh, what can we do to make that, you know, to mitigate that? Because, and that was, of course, the move was to say, well, this is something that people can do at home. And of course, today, where we are in distance learning for just about everybody, and even if you're not in distance learning, you learn at home as well. Well, that's a tool that you could be using at home, you know, and that's those strategies that were maybe practiced for those handful of students can now be used in the home environment on their personal devices.
Absolutely.
So Jennifer, let me ask you this. Your presentation was not just about how to use this particular tool for students with disabilities or for people with disabilities, but it was specific to AAC. I mean, is that right? Am I thinking of that right? Or maybe the part I walked in on was on AAC.
I think you did. I think the first year I started talking about it was just in general, like, wow, what is this? What can we do with it? And the following year is like, well, let's apply this. Does this work with AAC? Because I was getting a lot of questions like, yeah, but what about our students with AAC? And I started saying, okay, whoa, a voice is a voice. So I think that AAC devices and Alexa with their computerized voice are peeps and they will understand each other. So let's try it. And there's no pairing. There's no extra connection. It's just a voice. And sometimes the obvious isn't obvious, right? It's like, oh, let's just try it and see what it can do. You don't have to do all kinds of extra programming. Just talk. What do you want to say? But make sure you have an Alexa button. And certainly a lot of the vocabularies that I looked at might already have a pre-made Alexa page with some ideas, but you are not limited to those. Mm-hmm. So I started just playing around, well, what can it do? And first, when I think about physical access for some users, like, there's choices. Do you have Alexa page that you can use any of your vocabulary, or do you have some pre-stored phrases that you know the cues that Alexa wants to hear? For some of my students, I might have Alexa and the command on one button to simplify, but the reality is you can control it. So I started just playing with fun stuff. Like, I can make Alexa, you know, tell me Jedi jokes or turn on the Mandalorian for me in the other room and mess with my kids who want to watch something else. So there's a lot of, you know, fun to be had, but I think that fun helps get us thinking about, oh, what could this do that's really functional? And recreation is a function to get for motivation for using the device too.
So did I?
Yeah. Ooh, go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Well, I was going to ask you, so just to be clear, so you were saying that you might have a button on a student's communication device that's specific for Alexa, and that could be like a shortcut. And then they could also use generative language to you know, to ask a question to Alexa or to activate a skill.
You're explaining that much better than I just did, right? The only thing is that timing piece. But what I love is most devices let you tap on that speech display bar and play the whole generated sentence again for her to hear.
So let's dig into that for a second. So meaning I open up my communication device, whatever it might be, and I say, I push my Alexa button and I say, what's the word, Alexa? What? Tell me the word of the day, right? Mm-hmm. It might not work. Is that what you're saying? There might be some adjustments that need to be made with timing. Tell me more.
So a little bit. So if you just have one button that says the name Alexa or Alexis, we're doing a terrible job at that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We're trying.
Ew, Alexis.
So say when we're talking to Alexa and we just say Alexa and then we get distracted and we forget what we're going to say, she gives up on you after a certain amount of time. Actually don't know what the exact amount of time, but she's like, oh, you changed your mind. Maybe she misheard. She, I'm using that pronoun, Alexa. So you can have just a button that says Alexa and then phrases that, well, what would the phrase, the next cue that you would give her, the prompt. But you can combine them, or you might build out your generative sentence and then get that all together and then hit that one more time so that there's no delay. Mm-hmm. There's always little tweaks. I found even also I need to sometimes adjust the pronunciation of certain things. Like if I want to hear music by Demi Lovato, I need to be really clear that it's phonetically pronounced correctly, that it can be found. Mm-hmm.
I know that very well with my last name being what it is. Right. You know, you have to go in and pre-program. And in fact, I think, I can't remember, maybe you remember, there was it Microsoft back in the day that when you could still go back in and you could program what this text-to-speech will say. Right. And the example they had was Pacino, P-A-C-I-N-O, right? Because
because
text-to-speech would say Pacino, right? Or Pacino, it would know to put the H in there. So you'd have to go in and change it. So that's what you're saying we might have to do on a student's communication device or a person's communication device in order for Alexis to pick it up.
True. However, like I feel like 95% is just going to work. Mm-hmm. But there are things that might not work. Don't give up if you're starting to play with it, because it can be adjusted. We have these devices have incredible amounts of learner control and our learner specifications that you can adjust to make sure that it works to do the important things that your AAC user wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, so are there any other tips and tricks that you might suggest? Like changing that those pronunciations is one. Like I said, 95% of the time it's going to work, but occasionally when you have to make adjustments, what other tips and tricks might you have that are gotchas, you know what I mean? Or that would help people that were trying to implement this or got stuck or get hung up or, you know, prevent them from getting hung up?
I've heard the other thing that I've heard, but it's rare, that some folks are not finding that their particular choice of voice is well understood by Alexa. But I really only heard that a couple of times. And sometimes adjusting the rate or the pitch can help. Sometimes you always have the option maybe to use a Alexa profile. Don't change your voice, but maybe use a voice that's attracted to Alexa or that's understood. But I'll say that seems rare. I poked around with a lot of the voices that I had access to and was pretty successful with it. I think the biggest thing to tackle is to spend time trying to figure out what else can Alexa do with mm-hmm. any voice? And don't be thinking about what can I do with an AAC voice? What can you do with it? And then make sure that those words or phrases are available in that AAC device. Because it can be used for, you know, not, you know, for independence. That means huge independence with scheduling, with turning on lights and using all those great smart plugs, you know, dealing with some, you know, kind of basic environmental control are all huge and absolutely possible. Calling others too from your AAC device and communicating via your AAC device is possible too if you have your contacts set up correctly. So it's just so cool what you can do.
There's so many more possibilities that people right. don't really use it for. It's like any other technology. I mean, I like my computer. I know I'm using only a fraction of what it can do, you know, mm-hmm. and how many times are we surprised by that? And so I love that advice that you just gave, is explore what it can do, because there's so many things, you know?
Right.
And I love how you were saying too, that your own kids use it for their own scheduling and increasing that independence. I know my own kids, same thing. It's like you set your morning alarm, you know, so that it goes off. You set reminders for yourself when you have certain classes coming up and things like that, really help with the independence and not relying on somebody else.
Huge. And my kids use it. My daughter uses it to play rain at night. She loves the sound of rain. It helps her go to sleep. Fantastic. I didn't know Alexa would play rain. That's great.
You know, I think there's something else, Jennifer, with with Alexa that is it. So there's the out of the box things. There's the additional skills that are just infinite. You can make your own skills, right? Thanks. But I think there's something else that is sort of less talked about that I, especially when it comes to AAC, and that is helping students learn language using Alexa, meaning, when we're talking about communication, it really means there's two parties there, right? Unless you're talking to yourself, there's a communication partner, and human communication partners can be human, right? Where they, meaning they don't necessarily have the patience. Sometimes they might get distracted. Sometimes they're not the best communication partners. That's a skill you have to learn sometimes. Where there's with Alexa or Alexis, you can, okay, your message wasn't understood. How are we going to change that? How are we going to repair that communication breakdown? And there's no stress or pressure because she's not going, she, I use the pronoun too. Alexis is not going to judge you in any way, right? There's no, what do you think about that?
I think this is one of the areas of untapped potential, especially with the ability and the openness of Alexa and the blueprints, the Amazon blueprints, where you can write your own skills. And it really is writing. So you can decide what that conversation is going to be. So what is the expected input to Alexa? And what do you want that output to be? So the, it's really just a dialogue. You're writing a dialogue and you're writing the trees, branches of a dialogue. You know, if this is, because Alexa is just programmed to respond to what's spoken, what's said. And then, okay, if this is said, this is what I feed back. So I feel the potential for practice with AAC devices, for just exploring and experimenting and seeing what does that feedback loop come back at with. If you talk with Alexa device, I feel like we could get really clever with creating customized skills with their free blueprints feature. To work on core words, to work on social dialogue, to practice that back and forth beyond requesting something, right? We're all trying to get beyond. So I think that's kind of my next interest area of what else can we do? I mean, I've gone as far as just creating things to mess with my children, like on Mother's Day, go ask Alexa, who's the best mom in the world? I know she knows it's me. Amazing that Alexa does know that I am Jennifer Edgeson is the best mom in the world, which immediately my children say, oh, mom, you programmed that. But you can program it. And if it's a really good skill, then share it and we could all use it.
What's your experience like with those blueprints? Do you feel like it's you need to have a degree in coding to know how to do it, or is it pretty intuitive?
You need to be able to type or dictate text.
And that's it.
You need to have a map of what you want to do, like your plan, the PLAN, four-letter plan, right? But you can do that. What is amazing to me is when blueprints first came out, it was just, here's a Q&A, and you can make your own Q&A. And then within less than a year, there were dozens and dozens and dozens of skills that were created and shared. Mm-hmm. And now there are templates for that type of skill. Is that type of skill flashcards? Is that type of skill a chore chart for different members of the family? Is that type of skill, notes for the babysitter or the house sitter for your pet? Or for your mom who's doing your childcare and needs to know what to do with the Zoom learning thing, you can create your own skills. And now there's templates for those different types of skills that you can run with. So just click on what you want, take a look at it. You like it? All right, I'll create it. You need no engineering. My hope is that takes off with like STEM activities, with high school students creating things for others. Like, I need this skill. I'll figure out how to create it and then make it available. Like, I really would love that to take off with STEM teams the way 3D printing has and other things.
And really, like you said, it could be even more than STEM. First of all, you climbed right in my brain. You knew that's exactly we spent too much time together knowing exactly that's what we were going to say, because like how much time have we spent over our years helping teachers craft writing activities and using assistive technology writing tools. And here, this sort of templates would be authentic writing experience. You're not just writing for the teacher, you're writing for actually improving the world, you know? And so go and use the blueprints to write for to help somebody else learn how to use either Alexis or their communication device, or learn a specific word, or whatever it is that drives you. What a passion driven activity that actually has some meaning to the world, not just kind of like this, you know, artificial. It's not artificial.
I feel the same. Like I think across in a lot of areas of my life and a lot of areas of tech, it's kind of what drives me is hope. And that's like a passion to like figure something out and try to tap into the potential and just get that word out, like you do with your podcast and other things. Like to just, there's so much hope, and it's so meaningful to do something that matters. Well, you get to, you know, play with technology that's really interesting to you. Like it's win-win.
Totally. It's totally a win-win. So you had mentioned kind of the where you were thinking this could go next, like the this is where you're hoping it goes next. Beyond Alexis, beyond voice assistance, unless that is something you're continuing to think about, what are you questing after? What are some things you're curious about? What are you in either in the AAC space or just in general? What are you kind of wondering about?
I think in general, gosh, it's been a kind of reflective time, right? For several months. And I think I'm back to that. What's the potential for what we've learned about how we conduct our lives, but also in the tech space, like how these tools that maybe some of us have been playing with for a while have really been pushed to the test now too. And constantly discovering new ways of reaching all learners. I feel like there are so many tools or strategies in my tool belt because of this year than there were before. And there's so much more openness to talking about them. I think this just is an incredible time to really think about, do we want things to go back the way they were? And what things will forever stay in our practice, in our home practice, in our life practice, in our technology practice, in education practice? I hate the silver linings. I know it's an overused term, but there's real positivity of, okay, here are some of the good things and what can we keep? And how did remote learning really work for some children? Why? And how do we tap into that for the future?
Once again, maybe you were spying with your Alexis device in my house last night, but we were just having this conversation with some of my friends who are educators across the country about like all the benefits, you know, all the good. Let's not throw out the good that we've learned in this rush to get back to the way things were, because we knew the way things were didn't always work for everybody in the first place. So let's take some of these lessons and roll with them.
Right. And it didn't always work for everyone across the board, for everyone, not just thinking about our, you know, the AT space. Like there's so much potential. And I feel like there's openness, like, oh, maybe I can learn that. Maybe I can do this now. I invite you in to tell me more about this technology. Doors are opening. So I look at that and I feel positive. I feel hopeful for the future.
Me too. How many times have we heard over the years teachers say, well, I'm just not a technology person? Well, everyone was sort of forced to become a technology person. And now everyone has these, all everyone's skills rose so quickly. And their belief that they could do it rose along with that.
It is true. And I've always say to folks, like, it's okay if you're a little afraid of this technology. It's like, you know what you, the technology itself isn't what it's about. It's still really not that good without a really talented teacher behind it. Mm-hmm. Like what are you going to make it do to serve your purposes, to support, to reach these kids? It's not just about the technology, but if you're struggling with technology, that makes the hurdles, this the slope is really steep to learn, but it's worth it. It's worth it.
100% worth it. It changes lives, right? I mean, it changes lives for the better.
Absolutely.
All right. Let me ask you one last quick question.
Okay.
Tell me your favorite Alexa skill. What would be one that just jumps in your head, or that your kids love, or that you love, that everyone should know about? Oh, you got to use this skill.
The thing that got me most excited, there's so many that just flooded into my head. But what got most me excited was really back into the AT world, just the ability that I can independently, or any of my students could independently, turn on the TV directly to a show they'd like to watch or documentary, that we can do this hands-free with an AAC device. Huge. It's amazing. Like, you need other things like a Fire Stick or Cube or something. You need something else. But that we can do that just was exciting. And I didn't know it could do it till I just accidentally was playing with it and it worked.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Thank you for sharing this time and sharing your experience with working with these devices and your positive attitude. Really appreciate it, and continue to look forward to doing great things with you.
It is always a pleasure to work with you, Chris. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jennifer.